Well, the children led us well this morning as they pointed out some interesting features of our Good Shepherd window here at Hood Memorial Christian Church. And so I want to take a cue from them, and I want to think deeply about this beautiful image that's set in that space now for over 95 years. We're getting close to 100, and as you know, or as you may not know, lead has a life of about 100 years, and so it's time to re-lead these beautiful windows. It's been an exciting thing for me. You wouldn't think, if somebody said, you know, go stare at some stained glass windows for a few hours, that that would be all that exciting. But I have found it so this past week as I got word from our contractor that they'd be coming next week, and I thought, wow, I'm going to really miss this Mary and Martha window over the choir here. It's such a beautiful feature. You can't look at the choir and listen to them sing without seeing it in their background. And come this time next week, there's going to be some plywood in this place. And we'll get creative and think about what we can do to bring some life to a bare sheet of plywood this week and next week. But as we consider these windows, it may seem just like a regular average old feature of a church building. But you know, it has been said that windows, stained glass windows for the church long ago were the poor man's Bible. You ever heard that phrase? You see, at a time when the average person couldn't read the Bible or didn't even have access to the Bible, a window told a story in a way that nothing else could, through beautiful colors and through images and through symbols. And so today we're going to look at that. And as we begin to do that, I want to invite you to listen to Jesus' words about the Good Shepherd. If you can, where you're sitting in your seat, I want you to just turn, if you can, and gaze at the window as I read. You can close your eyes if you like, that's fine too. But I really want you to hear, to think about those symbols that the children pointed out to you this morning as you hear Jesus' words in the Gospel of John chapter 10. I am the Good Shepherd. The Good Shepherd lays his life down for his sheep. When the hired hand sees the wolf coming, he leaves the sheep and runs away. That's because he isn't the shepherd. The sheep aren't really his, so the wolf attacks the sheep and scatters them. He's only a hired hand, and the sheep don't really matter to him. I am the good shepherd. I know my own sheep, and they know me, just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father. I give up my life for the sheep. I have other sheep that don't belong to this sheep pen. I must lead them too. They will listen to my voice, and there will be one flock with one shepherd. This is why the Father loves me. I give up my life so that I can take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I give it up because I want to. I have the right to give it up. I have the right to take it up again. I receive this commandment from my Father. These are the words of Jesus in our holy book. We give thanks to God for His Word. This morning, I want to invite you to go back to a couple symbols. The children spoke about the flock of sheep in the picture. The children spoke about the lamb that Jesus is holding next to his bosom. Children spoke about the doorway that Jesus seems to be opening with his right hand. Children mentioned Jesus' head turned down, perhaps looking at the sheep, and also adorned with a crown of thorns. They also pointed out a couple of colors. And the one I want you to pay special attention to is what Jesus is wearing. Sort of a red, a dark red, perhaps. Maybe almost a red that's turning towards a brown. And I want us to reflect together. The Good Shepherd is an image that I would put forth to you that is fundamentally about relationship. But not in the way you might think. When we think about our relationship with Jesus, it's often about our individual, personal relationship with Jesus Christ. And the Good Shepherd is about relationship with Jesus, But as I said, not in the way you might think. You see, it's just not about your individual personal relationship with Jesus. The Good Shepherd is about more than that. There's this saying, maybe you've heard it before, and folks often say that Alexander the Great said this, and there's some debate about that, but I'm going to put it forth to you anyway. It goes something like this. I'm not afraid of an army of lions led by a sheep, but I'm terrified of an army of sheep led by a lion. Yeah. You see, this little saying tells us a couple things, right? That sheep are not great leaders. Lions are. Conversely, it tells us that lions don't really work well together in large numbers. Sheep do. Alone, you see, sheep can't do very much. Their power comes in their numbers. Their power comes in the flock. They are made for community with one another. And with the right leader, they are an unstoppable force. In fact, it's the flock that makes sheep so strong. It protects them. Alone, they're no match for the predators of the world, but together, especially with the right leader, a really good shepherd, they are safe and strong and can survive. The shepherd and his flock are not simply about an individual relationship between Jesus and a person, the shepherd and one sheep. The good shepherd image that we see in this beautiful window is about a flock, about being together, about strength in numbers, about our common relationship with Jesus. Our relationship to Jesus as a body of faith, as a church, as a family of faith. Not in isolation from one another, but together as we live with and work for the good and well-being of one another, protecting one another from all the thieves and bandits the world would throw at us. And pay attention, we're going to come back to this in a little bit. There's also a mention in this story of the Good Shepherd of other flocks. Not just this flock, but there's other flocks out there that Jesus will call in as well. We're going to get to that in a few minutes. The point is that this Good Shepherd image is about relationship. Just not in the way you might think. But there's also the sheep that Jesus is holding close to his heart. Paintings and stained glass of Good Shepherd Jesus often depict Jesus with a lamb around his neck. You might have seen such a picture before. There's been a lot of attempts to explain why artists have portrayed Jesus with a lamb around his neck. Probably because as I looked and dug over the past couple days to try to find out, do you carry a sheep around your neck? Is that what shepherds do? Is that what farmers do today? And I can't find anything that suggests that's the way you carry your sheep. In fact, I heard lots of people talking about whether you carry it by the hind legs or the front legs and how you move it and how you... But nothing said put it on your neck. Interesting. But there's been a myth around for about 60 or 70 years now. I think it came about in the 1950s. I can't remember the exact year, and I didn't write down the name of the person that it first came from. But I want to share this with you because it's a myth that goes something like this and kind of describes Jesus as this disciplinarian in our lives. Sheep tend to stray, the myth says. So shepherds would they would have to discipline lambs that would constantly go stray. The shepherd would use his rod and break the leg of the wandering lamb. After binding the broken leg, the shepherd would carry the lamb on his shoulders while the wound healed. During the healing process, the lamb needed a shepherd to provide food and transportation and protection because it couldn't move and walk on its own. Consequently, the lamb learned to trust the shepherd. And after it was healed completely, the lamb would be fiercely loyal to the shepherd and no longer stray. That's the way the myth goes. I don't know how that comes across to you or not. I heard a few gasps in the room. Maybe for you it's nice to think about Jesus doing something to pull you in and get you to trust him. I personally think that this image is kind of sick. It's kind of a sick thing to break someone's leg so that they're forced to rely on you. In fact, it amounts to manipulation, right? It's the kind of action of an abusive person who wants to force a victim into depending on him so that he can have his way. You can probably think about movies where there's that kind of stuff going on. It's really not an image of free will at all, is it? Next time you see an image of Jesus as the shepherd with a lamb around his neck, you're going to think twice about it, aren't you? So here's the truth. There's actually no historical evidence to this myth. And it makes no sense. It's not practical. In fact, it's very dangerous to break a sheep's legs. Dangerous to the sheep's health. It's a life-threatening act that you take upon that sheep. But someone back in the 1950s told an anecdotal story about a shepherd breaking a sheep's legs, and the idea has taken off, and pastors have been preaching this analogy for 60 or 70 years, even when there is no evidence for it. The story says that Christ knows the sheep, and that the sheep know Christ. Jesus doesn't need to break legs. Jesus is a shepherd who cultivates a relationship with his sheep so that when he finds those sheep, they'll follow him because they know his voice. They recognize his voice. Jesus knows how to talk to his sheep because he knows what to say to them to get them to move and guide them from one place to another. Go look at Sheep 101 on the internet and you'll find exactly that being instructed to farmers, that sheep have an uncanny ability to recognize a voice and a face, and they will come when they've developed a relationship of trust. We are Jesus' sheep. Jesus doesn't break our legs to manipulate us into trusting him. Jesus knows us. He doesn't just know our name or our history. It's not simply this cognitive knowledge that Jesus has of us. Jesus knowing is about a relationship. Jesus knows us intimately. He's our best friend, a father. Jesus knows us as a mother knows a child. It's a knowledge that's all about relationship based on honest love and compassionate care and authentic trust. Just like what you see pictured in our window. Jesus intimately holds that little lamb. And notice what hand Jesus is holding the lamb with, his left, so that that lamb is right next to what? Jesus' heart. It's a symbol of an intimate relationship, of Jesus pulling that lamb close to his heart, of loving that lamb, and wrapping that lamb in his cloak, close by, snug and protected. Jesus' relationship is not about manipulation. It's about intimacy. So the Good Shepherd is an image about relationship, but not in the way you might think. There are Christians who think about Jesus' relationship in terms of heaven and hell. Their relationship to Jesus is based on who is in and who is out. It's based on a fear of eternity, wanting to go on. The message of Jesus is simply about letting some in to heaven because they believe, and those who don't get shut out, the door, the gate closed in their face for eternity. But the shepherd's goal, as our story says and as the window illustrates, is to keep all the sheep together, to keep them from scattering, to bring them all into the sheepfold, into a safe place. It's a metaphor for the prayer that just a few chapters later in the book of John, we hear Jesus offer, that they might all be one. A prayer of unity and oneness, of bringing people together. And it's important to note, as I said earlier, that Jesus speaks in this scripture about other flocks. I wonder who those other flocks might be. Jesus says, I have other sheep that don't belong to this sheep pen. I must lead them too. They will listen to my voice, and there will be one flock, one shepherd. This is a great passage, especially for we disciples of Christ. It pushes us to welcome other sheep into the sheepfold. Sheep who may not call themselves Christian, but respond to the voice of the shepherd. You see, in the story about the Good Shepherd, the point is not simply belief. The point is response. I call and my sheep respond. Brothers and sisters, there are plenty of people out there responding to the call of Christ. to the voice of Christ in ways that we might not even understand. I even think about other religious traditions who see Jesus as a prophet, who believe in his teaching, who look to his words, may not call themselves Christian, but nonetheless respond to the voice of Jesus just as this story describes to us. Now, I know there's other places in Scripture that may seem to suggest something different, but at least we have this story that pulls and calls and challenges us to be more open-minded about others in the world. Most importantly, those folks who have been raised in the church and maybe drifted away because although they love Jesus Christ, they had a lot of trouble with Christians, feeling like we sometimes attribute to Gandhi that Christians don't act much like Christ. And so maybe they've left the sheep pen. The Good Shepherd reminds us to keep the door open. It reminds us that Jesus is keeping the door open. The Good Shepherd is not about who is in and who is out. It's not about a relationship that separates and divides people. It's not about doors being closed in faces. The Good Shepherd is about gathering all God's sheep together. It's about oneness and unity. So the Good Shepherd is about relationship, but not in the way you might think. Christians have most often viewed the Good Shepherd as an image exalting Christ, lifting Christ up into the place of our leader. But when you look at the Good Shepherd in the context of the book of John, Jesus does something different. In our picture on the window, Jesus' head is turned down. I want to think about that for a few minutes. In the context of the book of John, Jesus offers the image of the Good Shepherd to call out the Pharisees. Did you know that? If you look in the previous chapter, we read about a story of a blind man. A blind man, you'll remember the story, whom Jesus is healing. And to heal him, Jesus reaches down into the ground and pulls up some mud and spits in it. And makes a nice little loogie in his hand and wipes it on the man's eyes, right? You remember this story. It's great, right? Don't you just want to go out and anoint someone with some holy loogies? Maybe they'll have their sight back. The Pharisees overhear that this healing is taking place on the Sabbath. And with their legalistic mindset, they're trying to get Jesus in trouble. They're trying to catch Jesus. They see Jesus as an opposition to their leadership. Now the Pharisees think that they're the shepherds. Only they don't realize that they are shepherds who care more about themselves than their sheep. And so Jesus is trying to point this out. That in fact the Pharisees are acting more like bandits and thieves and strangers who come in to steal the sheep and take advantage of them. The Pharisees are people who don't know the sheep at all, who have no intimate relationship with the sheep. Leaders who care more about themselves than their sheep. And I think in our window, Jesus' head is tilted down in a symbolic way. Jesus' goal was not to exalt himself as a leader like the Pharisees did. His goal was to talk about what a good shepherd does. His goal was to call out the bad shepherding that was going on by the Pharisees. His goal was to say to the religious leaders of this day, here is what the model shepherd should do. And it's interesting that we say good shepherd all the time. The word for good in the Greek is kalos, which actually means model. The model shepherd. This is what a good shepherd. Good shepherd because it's the model shepherd. This is what a shepherd should do. Maybe there's not much difference in the effect of Jesus' words between lifting himself up and saying a pointed word to the Pharisees, but I think the context does make a difference. You see, Jesus is not simply gloating or boasting about himself. He is calling out the poor behavior of Pharisees and calling them in to act like good shepherds. The good shepherd isn't about exalting Jesus. It's about a model relationship. The model shepherd is a servant of the sheep. Not arrogant or boastful or prideful, but the model shepherd shows others the best way to be a shepherd through his life and witness. And that's exactly what Jesus does, calling others to care for sheep in the way that he is caring for sheep, to put the sheep before themselves. And that brings us to one last observation. Well, really two, that the children pointed out to us. The crown of thorns on Jesus' head. It's a reminder that, as the story says, the shepherd will lay down his life for his sheep. In the story, lay down one's life is meant to be a comparison. Specifically, as I've already alluded to, the Pharisees, right? You have to go back a bit in the story. And when you read about that blind man, and you read about Jesus being a shepherd, you realize that Jesus is talking about laying down his life. The Pharisees were doing anything but laying down their lives. The story says that Jesus is willing to lay down his life for his sheep. I want you to listen to that again. Jesus is willing to die for his sheep. And pay attention to the window again. The crown of thorns around Jesus' head, the red cloak that he has on. I want to suggest to you that the Jesus in our Good Shepherd window is not the resurrected Jesus who died past tense for you. How do I know that? Well, there's a couple things. First, colors matter in stained glass windows. What color did we say Jesus is wearing? Red. Red in stained glass art is used to represent humanity and the saving nature of the resurrection. It's the color of blood, and therefore it symbolizes life here on earth. White, on the other hand, is the color of heaven, the color of purity, of divinity, of heavenly life. If this were the resurrected Jesus, he would be in a white tunic with perhaps a blue sash. Blue also being a heavenly color, kingly color. But Jesus is wearing a red tunic, and that red signifies that this is not the resurrected Jesus, but the living human Jesus, not yet sacrificed on the cross. So what, you might say? Well, the point is that this is the earthly Jesus. It's the earthly Jesus with his crown of thorns pulled off of the cross and placed into the role of the Good Shepherd. Jesus has not yet died for you, this picture says, but Jesus is willing to die for you right now in this moment. We often talk in the church about how Jesus has died for us. This window in the story of the Good Shepherd suggests that Jesus is alive and well today and willing to lay his life down for you right now, again and again and again. This is not the teacher Jesus or the miracle performer Jesus, and it's not the resurrected Jesus. Instead, this is Jesus on the cross as a shepherd with a crown of thorns, a living shepherd who is ready right now to lay down his life for you. You see, in this passage, Jesus is not simply the good shepherd because he has already died for you. He is the good shepherd because he is alive and willing to go to the cross for you again today. The good shepherd is about our relationship with Jesus, just not in the way you might think. The good shepherd is not simply about the individual relationship, but about a community relationship, a relationship that encompasses us all. It's not simply about a relationship of abuse and manipulation. No, not at all. But about a caring intimacy and loving compassion. The Good Shepherd is not about a relationship defined by who is in and who is out, but about gathering all of the sheep into the sheepfold. It's about oneness and unity of relationship. The Good Shepherd is about relationship, but not about exalting the shepherd as our great leader, but about recognizing that our shepherd is first servant to us all. The Good Shepherd is about relationship, but not simply this self-serving, legalistic relationship like the Pharisees, but about love that serves others, about putting others before self. the Good Shepherd is about relationship, not of someone who died for you, past tense, though that is true, but about one who is alive and walking with you in this very moment, ready again to go to the cross to save you, his beloved sheep. And if you ask me, that's the kind of relationship that's worth having in your life.